Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief for the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films The Phantom of the Open, Operation Mincemeat, and Crimes of the Future.
It's going to be one of those weeks with very, very, very different films that we have here, three of them. And I'm starting off with the most lighthearted of the bunch, The Phantom of the Open. And I got to repeat that, everyone. This is not The Phantom of the Opera. This is The Phantom of the Open. And it's kind of a new little sort of very small little subgenre of movies is out these days. There certainly seems to be more and more movies made for old people, about old people, or older people at the very least, my demographic. And so that's very nice to see. And it's not surprising that the movies are catering because it's a growing demographic. I was born a little before the baby boomers, but the baby boomer generation is growing older and there are plenty of them and plenty of us. And so the movies are giving us more stuff about people like us, a little bit like us. Just recently, for example, and I'll mention it because this movie is still around, Jim Broadbent, the great English actor, stars in a movie called The Duke, which is about an old man who steals a painting or is accused of stealing a very, very valuable painting. And he uses it as blackmail to no longer have to pay a tax on his television set. So that's definitely one of these movies about sort of an older man who does something mischievous, something a little bit scurrilous. And now we have The Phantom of the Open, which is another one of these movies. And this time we have the very great actor Mark Rylance, who stars as a man named Maurice Fitcroft. And you'll know a little bit about this movie when you find out that it's based on a book, the full title of which is The Phantom of the Open, Maurice Fitcroft, the World's Worst Golfer. And that's exactly what it's about. And like The Duke, it's based on a real-life case that really happened. There is this man, this older man, named Maurice Fitcroft, and he's worked his whole life, although it looks like that may be coming to an end sometime soon. And he, for some reason, decides to take up golf. He just decides he wants to be a golfer, and he sees some golf on TV and thinks, oh my gosh, that looks interesting. But he doesn't just decide to be a golfer. He decides he's going to be a golfer who is going to win the British Open, this hugely, hugely, hugely important international golf tournament. So here we have a guy who has hardly ever picked up a golf club. Well, really almost never until this stage of his life. He's an old guy. And he decides to enter the British Open. This is back in 1976. So guess what happens? Surprise, surprise. He does really, really badly. First of all, his big accomplishment is getting to play in the tournament at all because he doesn't really qualify. And he does this partly by putting himself down as a professional, even though he's not a professional when he fills out the application. He figures, well, I'm pretty good. So he decides he's a professional. So he gets to play in the tournament. But then when he's up there, he is just awful. And yes, he does get the worst score ever in the history of the British Open. So that ought to be the end of the movie after, you know, maybe a half an hour or something like that. But it isn't. He persists. He keeps on going. And as the movie proceeds, we see various things he does. He still thinks that he has real potential as a golfer. He still thinks that if he could just iron out a few little things, he could somehow become a winner of the French Open, of the British Open, or at least a very, very great golfer of some sort. He enters tournaments under false names. He disguises himself. He does all of these uproarious things with accomplices sometimes. And, well, I'll just say that I won't tell you how the movie comes out. Mark Rylance is just a wonderful actor, and he does a wonderful job with this character. It's not an exciting movie. It's not an exciting character, but Rylance makes him a real human being, and we watch him do these outrageous and sometimes idiotic things, but we sympathize with him, and we're sort of on his side, and we sort of understand why he is doing these ridiculous things. Also in the movie is the wonderful Sally Hawkins. She is kind of a specialist in nice characters, who have sort of upbeat attitudes toward life, whatever goes on. And yep, that's what she has in this movie too. So it's always a pleasure to see Sally Hawkins, and there's a very, very good supporting cast. I have to say that I really enjoyed most of The Phantom of the Open. Near the end of the movie, it gets very sappy and sentimental, and it just sort of lost my interest. It doesn't manage to sustain its dramatic interest until the end. It really kind of just dribbles away. But most of the way through, I really enjoyed The Phantom of the Open. And if you enjoy movies about golf, if you enjoy movies with Mark Rylance, if you enjoy just sort of quirky movies about an older character who decides to do something a little bit unusual, then The Phantom of the Open is for you. It's not a great movie by a long shot, but it's a very nice movie. And until it sort of dribbles away into sentimentality near the end, I had a very good time watching it. So by all means, The Phantom of the Open is not one of the year's best movies, but is one of the year's nice movies. Our second film today, Jill, is a lot more ambitious, Operation Mincemeat. And even though that makes it sound to me like some sort of a comedy, it is not that at all. It is a World War II movie, and it's based on a fascinating, again, true story. That's one thing that The Phantom of the Open and Operation Mincemeat have in common. They're both based on reality. So way back during World War II, it became very important to Winston Churchill, who is a minor character in this movie, and various others, to pull off an enormous deception on the Nazis, to fool the German army into thinking something which was utterly not true. The German army was expecting a huge invasion by the Allied forces into Sicily. So the Allied forces decided that they were going to deceive the Germans into thinking that instead the operation was going to take place someplace else. And so that is what the whole thing is about. It is about pulling off this enormous deception, fooling the entire German army, its command, all the people in charge of it, the government itself, Hitler himself, into thinking that this huge invasion was going to take place in a place where it was not going to take place. So how are they going to do this? Well, the idea was we'll have to get some false documents into the hands of the Germans that they think are true, and then they will... They will simply be in the wrong place. So how are they going to get these documents into the hands of the German? Well, the idea is you have to let the Germans think that they found them just by some stroke of luck. So, okay, the documents will be in the possession of a military person who has drowned and is found in the ocean, and then with these papers on him, and then the papers will be turned over to the authorities, and they will get into the hands of the Germans. So the idea is, they'll plant these papers onto somebody who will then be found drowned in the ocean near Spain, and through the normal protocol of things, the papers will get into the Nazis' hands. Okay, so how do you do this? You can't simply drown somebody. You can't send a soldier out and say, your job this week is to get drowned with these papers on you. So they have to find a corpse. They have to find a corpse who is fresh enough and can be used to be dumped in the ocean with these papers on them. So, that's one of the first challenges that is faced in the movie. Then the idea is, once the corpse is found with these papers on them, will the Germans believe that the papers are real? So in order to do this, they have to put all kinds of other things onto this corpse, give the corpse a personal life, a photo of his girlfriend back home, a love letter from her that he carries on his, all this kind of thing which is done. So they do all of this stuff, and that's what the movie is about. It's about setting up this enormous deception, and then eventually when we get near the end of the movie, it's about whether the deception worked or not, whether it fooled the Germans, whether the whole thing was pulled off. So that's what it's about. If you're interested in World War II, this is a movie that you should not miss. It's a really, really well-made movie, too, directed by John Madden, who specializes in sort of straightforward kind of things. He's not a very flashy or experimental director. He just likes to tell a good story, straightforward. Probably his most famous film from years ago is Shakespeare in Love. And this movie has a very, very, very fine cast with all sorts of first-rate people in it. We have the likes of Colin Firth and Matthew McFadyen and Rufus Wright and some wonderful women are in it. Kelly MacDonald is in it and Penelope Wilton. So it's a really, really good movie. And it deals largely with, and this is all set up at the beginning, through a sort of voiceover. It deals with the fact that there are two phases to every war, or actually two levels to every war. There's the part that's public, that everybody sees, the fighting, the battles, who's winning, who's losing. And there's the part that's sort of underground, that nobody sees. And that's what they're trying to pull off here with Operation Mincemeat. They're trying to get to pull off a deception, so it's something that the world will never know about until long, long, long into the future. And then maybe it will all come into the open, as in fact Operation Mincemeat actually did. When I was watching Operation Mincemeat, I was totally reminded of the story. I've seen this before. And then I realized it was back in a movie from the middle 1950s called The Man Who Never Was, with Clifton Webb and Gloria Graham, directed by Ronald Neame. A very, very good movie. So anybody who's really interested in this subject should watch not only the new movie, Operation Mincemeat, but that 1950s movie, The Man Who Never Was. They both tell the same story, and it really is the same story. An enormous amount of overlap, a big difference being that Operation Mincemeat makes a very big deal out of a sort of a love triangle among the people who are working behind the scenes to pull off this deception in the British intelligence world. And that part I found a little bit stretched out. The movie is well over 2 hours long, and if you took out all the love stuff, it would turn into a movie a more normal length. It would probably be more taut, more tightly knit. But even as it is, I had a good time watching Operation Mincemeat, watching wonderful actors do a terrific job of just telling this very straightforward and very suspenseful story of something that really happened, a whole big intelligence operation back during World War II. It's a suspenseful movie, a beautifully made movie, and I had a good time watching it. Operation Mincemeat, good World War II movie, devoid of battle scenes, and that it's in itself is refreshing for a war movie. And our final film this week, Crimes of the Future, comes from a very major Canadian filmmaker, David Cronenberg, who, from the very beginning of his career, has been a specialist. He specializes in the creepy, the uncanny, and often the hard to watch. He makes horror movies, science fiction movies, and very often movies like Crimes of the Future, his new one, that straddle the line between horror and science fiction. He used the title Crimes of the Future once before at the very beginning of his career for a very minor little film that he made on a practically no-budget kind of a basis. This film has nothing in common with that to speak of, but it's the same title again, Crimes of the Future, and it's a whole new movie, and it's a very, very ambitious movie from David Cronenberg. I don't think it's very successful, but it certainly is ambitious, and it certainly is different from anything else around. So here's what Crimes of the Future is about. We have a setting in the future, yes, and human evolution has been proceeding along lines that we really don't expect just now, probably because of all the pollution that is in the world, which is one of the big themes of the movie. Human evolution has taken a new course. Some people are sprouting new kinds of organs in their bodies, organs that have never been seen before. It isn't always clear what they do. And so these people are being studied, and there's a whole registry that's sort of operating undercover to register and keep track of these new organs that are sprouting. And our main character is a guy named Saul Tenser, played by Viggo Mortensen, who's worked a lot with David Cronenberg. He is one of these people who is sprouting these new organs. And with his partner, whose name is Caprice, she is actually a former surgeon, and they have both become performance artists. So here's what their performance art consists of. She, in a public setting, operates on him and takes out these new organs from his body for all the world to see. So this is pretty grisly stuff, and of course, this is a pretty grisly movie. Now, the way this movie begins is with the murder of an 8-year-old child by his mother. And this becomes an important storyline within the film, because it turns out that he was one of these people who has been sprouting the new organs. In his case, he is able to eat plastic. And this turns out to be perhaps one of the purposes of the new organs, which evolution is giving humanity, that perhaps in the future we will be able to get rid of our own toxic waste by eating it. However, this is very upsetting to such people, such as the mother of this young boy. So anyway, yes, the plot is complicated. Yes, it sort of jumps back and forth a little bit in time. And yes, it has a whole lot of really grisly stuff in it, starting with the murder of a child and going on to these surgical shows by the performance artists, et cetera, et cetera. I will add that one thing which may make Crimes of the Future easier for some people to watch or harder for some people to watch is that it is dark. And I just don't mean dark in subject matter. It is so dark, it's as if Cronenberg couldn't afford to turn the lights on. Scene after scene, shrouded in darkness, blackness, gloom, dimness, murkiness. And I found that, after a while, awfully annoying. Cronenberg is a fascinating filmmaker. He's made some very good movies over the year. His very best is Dead Ringers, way back from the late 1980s, and it has some things in common with Crimes of the Future. David Cronenberg is recycling some of his favorite scenes here. He also did the remake of The Fly back in the mid-80s, Spider in the early 2000s, A History of Violence, which is a very good movie. Crimes of the Future is not as taut or as gripping or just as interesting as any of those movies, in my opinion. It's not as successful as a movie to just watch. But it's ambitious. It has things to say about environmentalism, about the possible dangers of the future of human evolution, and it tells a mildly interesting story about some very creepy characters doing very creepy things. So if David Cronenberg's brand of creepiness is what you're into, then have a look at Crimes of the Future. Otherwise, I say go back and look at Dead Ringers. It's a much, much better movie. And that is my somewhat variegated story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you, as ever and always. Variegation is the spice of life. David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films. The Phantom of the Open, Operation Mincemeat, and Crimes of the Future.